All right, so we're really diving deep this time, huh? Hillbilly Elegy, J.D. Vance. A memoir that yanks you right into this world. I think a lot of us, we hear about it, but we don't really get it. The white working class, particularly folks with Appalachian roots.
And it's interesting, you know, you see a title like that, Hillbilly Elegy, and you might think, oh, another book about poverty. But Vance, he kind of preempts that right from the beginning. He's not writing this from some ivory tower.
No, not at all.
He even says what he achieved, graduating from Yale Law School, to a lot of folks, that's, you know, that's just life. That's what you're supposed to do. But he's coming from this background where statistically
it's like winning the lottery almost.
Exactly. And he's very aware of that. So he's not trying to paint this like triumphant rags to riches story. It's way more than that. It's like he's peeling back the layers of this whole culture, this whole way of life, to show us the forces, the good and the bad, that shape you when you grow up like he did.
And that's what I found so gripping. You know, it's like we talk about poverty and we often reduce it to just economics. Mm-hmm. But Vance's life, his arguments, they show it's way more. What's the word, tangled, than that?
Oh, absolutely. It's a web. And he lays that out right away, splitting his time between Jackson, Kentucky summers, steeped in Appalachian tradition, and Middletown, Ohio, where he actually grows up. And both places, as he describes them, it's like you can practically see the poverty, feel it.
And that sense of being stuck.
Yeah, absolutely. Like he says, Jackson, it's beautiful, stunning, natural beauty, but then there's this crushing poverty, families struggling, kids stuck in schools that are failing them. The opioid crisis, which he talks about a lot, it's like this dark cloud hanging over everything.
He doesn't shy away from any of it, does he? He talks about this sense of hopelessness that permeates everything. And it's not just about lacking money.
Right.
It's deeper. Like, you're not even seen, not really, by the outside world.
And even worse, sometimes he talks about this meanness almost, but not in a cruel way. It's like people would rather just avoid confronting these harsh realities, you know? Because if you acknowledge it, then you risk judgment. Or even worse, you seem disloyal to your own.
Which is kind of wild when you think about it, right? This loyalty to family, to community, it's usually a good thing. But in this context, it becomes
a double-edged sword.
Exactly. You can't fix what you refuse to even acknowledge.
And that whole dynamic, you see it perfectly embodied in his family, the Blantons. Talk about a cast of character.
Oh, the Blantons. Fiercely loyal, ready to brawl at the drop of a hat. And this whole code of honor that's, I don't know, admirable and terrifying at the same time.
Oh, completely. Like, he tells this story, right, about his grandmother, Mama Blanton. This woman, she feared nothing and no one. Apparently, Vance's uncle overheard some guy making a crude comment about Mama.
Oh, no.
So what does he do? He drives home, grabs a pair of Mama's underwear.
Wait, what?
And makes the guy eat them at knife point.
You're kidding.
Nope. And Vance, he talks about how these stories, they made him feel like hillbilly royalty growing up.
I can only imagine.
But, and this is the thing, it wasn't all this like romanticized, tough love, nostalgia. There was a very dark side to this legacy too, particularly with his mom, Bev.
Yeah. It's one thing to have this rough around the edges, we take care of our own kind of family. It's another when you've got addiction, instability, violence, all tangled up in there.
Exactly. And that's Vance's childhood in a nutshell. His mom battles addiction, goes through relationships like water, and it creates this environment where chaos and uncertainty are the norm. It's not just tough love, it's witnessing fights, feeling emotionally neglected, constantly feeling like you're walking on eggshells.
And you can see how, for a kid, that constant upheaval, that normalization of dysfunction, it would start to feel like this is just how life is.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what Vance is getting at, right? It's not about blame. It's about understanding. It's about recognizing how these deeply ingrained patterns, even the ones that are meant to protect you, to bind you together, they can also trap you in this cycle of poverty and despair.
It's like he's growing up in this pressure cooker of instability. But then, even as a kid, he starts to see a different path for himself. And it's not sports, it's not music, it's .education. Which seems kind of ironic, given his surroundings.
It really is. Like, he talks about how education wasn't discouraged exactly in his community.
Right. Not like it was a bad thing.
Right. But it wasn't exactly celebrated either. It wasn't seen as this, like, magical key to a better life or anything. But Vance, he gets this feeling. He starts to see education as his ticket out. And the way he describes how that realization hits him, it's kind of hilarious, actually.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about, the 10 times 3 story. I swear I felt that one deep in my soul.
Right. It's so relatable. It doesn't matter if you've lived Vance's life or not. He's in first grade, right? And the teacher's asking for equations that equal 30. And little JD is so proud of himself for yelling out, 50 minus 20!
Agorable.
Totally. But then, some kid just casually drops 10 times 3, and Vance is like, wait, what? He had no clue what multiplication even was.
It's like this light bulb moment. He suddenly sees this whole world of knowledge, of opportunity, that he's completely oblivious to.
Precisely. And more importantly, he wants in. But of course, getting from that realization to actually breaking out of the environment he's in, well, that's where things get really complicated.
Huge understatement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating how the next turning point in his life takes him about as far away from those Kentucky hollers as you can get.
Yeah.
The United States Marine Corps.
Talk about a culture shock. He goes from this world of, let's be honest, kind of romanticized hillbilly justice and constant chaos to boot camp, structure, discipline, orders being barked left
and
right.
Flipping a switch.
Totally. But it's not just the external environment that changes, right? It's the internal transformation that's really remarkable. He talks about how the Marines instilled in him the sense of self-reliance, leadership skills, this ability to push himself further than he thought possible. Remember that story about the cake?
Oh man, the cake incident. How could I forget?
It's such a small thing, but it speaks volumes. He's at boot camp and he dares to take a second piece of cake.
Rookie mistake.
Right. And the drill instructor, without missing a beat, just smacks the cake right out of his hand. But here's the thing. Vance, he doesn't even flinch.
Which, knowing his background, you'd almost expect him to come out swinging.
Exactly. But he doesn't. He talks about how he realized right there that there was a bigger lesson happening. Something about self-control. About challenging those impulses he'd grown up with.
Like, don't react. Respond.
Yes. And that one incident, it's like this perfect microcosm of his whole Marine Corps experience. He's constantly being tested, pushed to his limits, forced to confront his weaknesses. And he comes out the other side changed, hardened, almost like he's been forged in fire.
It's like he builds this new identity for himself. One based on hard work, discipline, this clear sense of purpose that had maybe been missing before. But then, just as he's finding his footing, he gets hit with another massive culture shock.
Mm-hmm.
Yale Law School.
From the barracks to the Ivy League. Could you imagine two more different worlds? But that's what's so interesting about Vance. He doesn't shy away from those differences. He embraces them. He talks about those early days at Yale, this constant feeling of being an outsider, like he's trying to navigate this invisible maze of social cues and expectations.
Didn't you tell that story about wine? That always gets me.
Oh, yeah. The Sauvignon Blanc versus Chardonnay dilemma. Classic.
He's at this fancy law firm dinner, and the waitress asks him what kind of white wine he wants. And he just says, white.
Because in his world, that makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But of course, she's like Sauvignon Blanc or Chardonnay, and he's completely lost.
It's such a small moment, but it speaks volumes about this massive cultural divide he's dealing with, right? And it's not just the social stuff. He even talks about how differently people at Yale approach ambition, success, even just a basic work ethic.
You can just imagine him sitting there in class with his classmates who've never had to worry about where their next meal is coming from, who've had every advantage handed to them.
Right. It would be so easy to just crumble under that kind of pressure, to say, this isn't for me, I don't belong here. But Vance, he doesn't do that. He actually uses that feeling of otherness, that awareness of his unique perspective, to fuel him.
He even proves wrong the professor who said state school kids needed remedial education.
It's like he takes his hillbilly roots, those experiences, those struggles, and turns them into this secret weapon. He's not trying to erase where he came from. He's owning it. But even with all that success at Yale, those achievements, you can still feel this tension. Like, he can't quite outrun the shadows of his past.
Yeah, it's almost like he's escaped on paper.
Yeah.
Right? Gone from this world of chaos and lack to Yale Law School. But those internal chains, they're harder to break.
And that's where Vance's story gets really, really interesting. He's not afraid to admit that this whole idea of upward mobility, it's not just about changing your address or your income bracket.
It's deeper than that.
Way deeper. It's about confronting these deeply ingrained patterns, these almost like automatic responses to stress, to conflict, the stuff we inherit from our families, from the environments we grow up in. He even sees it in himself, these moments where he's like, whoa, is that my mom coming out?
Like, he's afraid of turning into another statistic, another case of someone who had all this potential but got dragged back down by the same forces that kept his family stuck.
Yeah.
Didn't he say he used to have those dreams? Almost nightmares?
Oh, yeah. He talks about those. And they're powerful. Like that one recurring dream he had as a kid about the monster in the treehouse.
Right. Where he's trapped and this monster's trying to kill him. But what gets me is how that dream changes as he gets older. At first, he's the one being chased. But later, as an adult, it flips. He becomes the monster.
It's chilling, right? Like, on some level, he's terrified of succumbing to those same destructive impulses he saw in his mom, becoming the very thing he spent his life trying to escape. But, this is important, Vance doesn't just focus on his own struggles. He starts looking at the patterns he sees in his community, in Appalachia as a whole, and he starts talking about this culture of learned helplessness, this cycle of self-destructive behaviors that keep people trapped.
And he doesn't sugarcoat it. He's talking about financial instability, addiction, violence, this tendency to blame outside forces instead of taking responsibility. It's like he's drawing this family tree, but instead of names, it's these patterns of behavior being passed down generation after generation.
It's a really powerful image, right? And he talks about this resentment he sees too, this feeling that the system is rigged, that no matter how hard you work, you're always going to be stuck on the bottom. And it's an uncomfortable thing to hear, but it's important. You can't fix a problem if you don't understand where it's coming from.
And to his credit, Vance isn't just interested in complaining about the problem. He's looking for solutions.
Yeah.
And what struck me is he doesn't just point the finger at the government, at policies, and say they need to fix this. He believes that real change, lasting change, has to come from within too.
He's definitely not saying those things don't have a role to play, but he's pushing back against this idea that it's somebody else's job to fix things, that people have to take some responsibility for their own lives, for making different choices.
He talks a lot about mentorship, too,
having
people in your corner who believe in you, who push you. He credits his mama, even with all her flaws, his sister, even his time in the Marines, with giving him the tools, the belief in himself, to actually break free. And it makes you think, what if everyone had that? What if every kid growing up in those circumstances had someone saying, you can do this, you're worthy of more?
It's a powerful thought, isn't it? You know, beyond individual support, he also talks about the need for these bigger cultural shifts, challenging those norms, those values that keep these cycles of poverty and despair going. It's like, how do you change the story people tell themselves about what's possible? How do you expose kids to different possibilities, different ways of living, different futures they can strive for? And those are big, complex questions with no easy answers.
No, they really are. But Vance's story, as tough as it is at times, it does offer a flicker of hope, don't you think? Like, it's this testament to resilience, proof that you aren't doomed by your circumstances. And it leaves us with this really powerful question to ponder. How much of who we are is determined by where we come from? By those family legacies, those cultural forces that shape us from such a young age? And how much power do we really have to grab the reins and steer our lives in a different direction?
Absolutely. It's something we can all ask ourselves no matter where we come from or what our backgrounds are. It really makes you think.
It really does. And on that note, that's a wrap on this deep dive into J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy. Until next time, keep those questions coming.